to this edition of the Rooster Crows podcast. My name is Stephen Milton. Have you ever witnessed history being made in person? You know, not watching it on TV, but actually being there in person? Well, that happened to me a year ago. A colleague of mine, Reverend Angie Hocking, invited me to attend a meeting at a church on an evening in May. It was one of those old, dark wood churches. All the pews had been removed, so it felt a lot like a cave. Inside, about 40 people milled about, waiting for the meeting to start. We were here because a union organizer had come to Toronto to talk about how to start a union. But not just any kind of union. This would be a union for homeless people. Now it's a little over a year later, and the union is going strong, the first of its kind in Canada. In today's episode, I speak to two members of the union about how it came about and what it's been doing this year. My guests are Reverend Angie Hocking, who invited me to the meeting, and a refugee from Africa who's been in Toronto for a year. She asked that we not use her real name, so for today she'd like to be called Aya. So I invite you to sit back and listen to this amazing story of Canada's first union for people experiencing homelessness.
Hello, my name is Angie Hocking. I am a community minister in Regent Park.
Okay, and what is a homeless union? I gather that the one that you're part of is the first one of its kind in Canada. Can you explain where homeless unions started and what they are?
Absolutely. So there is a National Union of the Homeless, the NUH, in the United States, but they started over 30 years ago in mostly California at the time. And they really grew and created different chapters. And it was really from a place of, you know, what does it look like for people that are experiencing homelessness to be part of their own part, to be part of the solution themselves, to be the ones that are deciding what kinds of things need to be done, as opposed to other people always deciding that for them. And even, you know, even well-meaning advocates, you know, we all do that kind of thing. And we say we speak on behalf of people, but we're still speaking on behalf of people. And we're not actually often, even with the best of intentions, sometimes giving people the actual floor and the actual opportunity to organize themselves. So the National Union of the Homeless was really conscious of this back in the, I want to say it was the 80s or something that they started. And they did a lot of this development in California, especially. They had their own hiatus for about 15 years, I think, where they were not very active. And then they've kind of rebounded over the last 8 to 10 years and started growing again in the United States.
One of Angie's friends had seen the union in action while he was living in an encampment. He mentioned the homeless union idea to Angie when he moved back to Toronto. Angie thought it was interesting, had a few Zoom calls with members of the union, and one of them was Anthony Prince, a homeless union organizer from California. He decided to come up to speak in Toronto in May of 2023. That was the meeting Angie invited me to at All Saints, an Anglican church in the downtown east side of Toronto.
So Anthony did a really great overview of history of oppression in the United States, especially in regards to homeless folks, and how the NUH has been responding to that in various chapters. And now the NUH is actually in about 15 or 20 different states.
And I was there that night that he spoke, because you invited me to come and see. And did you think that, people were going to vote that night to become a union? Because it seemed like he was just sort of saying, so what are you guys waiting for?
Yeah, it was surprising. I mean, you know, we had talked before with the much smaller group of community members with him. So there was definitely energy, but at the same time, I think there was a real exciting energy that evening that was just like really inspiring, and people were captivated. It felt like we were at a really good church service. Like it was like a lot of amens and a lot of, you know, like real great energy around like what this is and what needs to be done and who we're inviting in and who we're centering and, you know, how to do that. And it was just, there was a real energy. So there was a suggestion from the floor that night to say, like, why don't we just get it rolling now? We have 80 people. I mean, there was 80, 85 people that showed up that night. So, you know, why don't we just have a vote and the people that are here now can be at the ground level of building this together. So it was thrown out at the time, and we had a big vote, and it was great. And we launched that night, and we ended up, and we've, you know, things have changed, which I'm happy to get into as we go. But that was the start of it last year.
One of the people there was Aya, a recent arrival to Canada. She had come as a refugee and was shocked to be living in a homeless shelter in such a wealthy country.
My name is Aya. I came to Canada over a year ago. Since I didn't have any family or friends in Canada, when I had the idea of formation of a union, I was automatically interested in joining because this is something different, because as refugees are programmed to just receive and not like stand up for ourselves or have an opinion, or we're not given the opportunity to express what we can offer. That's the union is different because it gives you an opportunity to discover who you really are. And it was an amazing night. It's already stuck in my head. It was very awakening to me because it shows how people can organize from something and then it becomes huge. That's even the union. That's where we're headed.
Yeah. That's great.
Also, being able to meet very kind people in the union, that's very important to me. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So when there isn't a union, right, when underhoused and people who are experiencing homelessness are just living on their own, my sense from having, you know, being an advocate on this issue for a few years is that the city just makes decisions on its own. And it claims there isn't really anybody to talk to because, of course, there aren't any formal organizations of people who are underhoused. And so they just expect advocates to argue back at them, but the people who are actually experiencing homelessness don't get a voice. Was that your experience?
Yes, definitely. I wish the city could just go to shelters or even encampments and meet the people. Like, the city should come to us. They should leave the offices, not just to wait in the offices and say, oh, there's no one to talk to. Mm-hmm. The people actually have issues, real issues that no one is even, you don't know where to go to or who to go to. Because I was in the shelter system and I felt like I was lost. Yes, I was in the shelter system, but I didn't have any kind of support. Mm-hmm. But the city at the top executive, maybe they think, no, everyone is okay, they're sleeping. Mm-hmm. But they don't know the real issues that people are facing down there in their shelters or even at the encampments. So much is going on. I wish they could do better than just sit there and say, oh, no, we don't have anyone to talk to. People are actually suffering and not really, like, I don't know how I can put it, but people have real issues that need to be looked into or solved. But no one to go to, because those people who, okay, the staff in the shelters, you can't open up to them and be like, okay, I'm suffering. You don't get that choice. To them, as long as you have a bed, you got a meal, that's it. You don't have to say anything else. That's it. You have a bed, you had your lunch, dinner, breakfast, you're good. So you don't get a choice to express yourself. So you have to suppress all your suffering and feelings inside. Because, I mean, you're scared. Maybe if I voice my concerns, I will lose my spot. So you're left with no choice. So that's why the idea of the union is very, very important.
Oh, I was just going to add, that was excellent what Aya said, and so, so true. So I've been working with folks that experience homelessness for about 17 years in Toronto. And another big thing I see is just exactly what Aya said around the basic needs. If those are kind of met, even when they're not, to be quite honest, but especially if those are kind of met in some sense where there's technically a bed and there's technically food involved, it's just everything else that people desire or want to work on or need, they are just passed around. It's like, you know, so even if there's services that do help with certain things, it's, oh, go talk to this place, oh, that, and then you go all the way there, all the way to Etobicoke, all the way wherever that is, Scarborough, And then they're like, oh, actually, we don't do that anymore. You got to go to this place. And it's like, people are passed around everywhere. And I've heard this hundreds of times of people just being so burnt out from living and trying to move forward. And I think what is resonating with people about being in the union is it's a bunch of people, for one, that have had that similar experience of like, of just like bonding in the sense of like, we are experiencing the same kinds of things. And that is not okay. Like, this is not an okay way to be treated. So in one sense, the union is just bonding people together, which is very powerful, especially when it comes to building collective power, realizing, oh, wait, like we're all experiencing this same crap, maybe in different ways, maybe through different organizations, maybe in different spaces, but it's the same crap. And so we really need to, and so when people get together and find space to actually realize we are being wronged, all of us are being wronged in very similar ways, what do we do about it, right? And so it's just this really powerful kind of natural space like that I think generates a really unique opportunity around organizing because people are finding each other in the space.
Oh, that's very cool. And this is a question for both of you. It's called the Toronto Underhouse and Homeless Union. Why not just Toronto Homeless Union?
So we were the Toronto Homeless Union for the first, I don't know, six, 8 months or something like that. We were finding that people weren't necessarily wanting to identify as homeless if they were hoping to not be homeless soon, you know? And even though, you know, you can be part, you know, some of us might say, oh, but you can be part of a homeless union and not be homeless. Other people were saying, but that actually makes me feel more stuck, perhaps, like not having language that kind of includes, like, you know, I don't want to be homeless for the next 10 years and I might want to be part of this union for a long time. So we were actually finding it was just people's reactions to the wording that made us bring it to the meeting and talk through it. And then a member had thrown out, like, what about underhouse? Like, what about just like naming, like calling us something slightly different where people feel that it's more inclusive of them. And underhouses, you know, people under the threat of homeless. So that could be somebody, underhousing can include someone that's couch surfing. It can include someone that is housed, but very poor, you know, and like can only pay for rent. It can include, you know, people that are just looming evictions over their, I mean, this is thousands of people in Toronto. This is a huge issue, evictions, you know, because if people get evicted now, if they got their place 7, 10 years ago and they get evicted, it is so difficult to get back into the market and to get or any, like, not only a place that's similar to what they have, but any place, to be honest. It's really hard for people to get back into the market. So anybody that's under the threat of homelessness, whether it be, you know, students, there's a lot of students that are starting to come to us and be part of the union because they're like barely housed themselves or they're living with five other students, but that's very precarious. It's only for a few months, you know? So people are all in all different kinds of situations. And we found that underhoused, kind of calling it something with a bit more inclusive name, was resonating with people a bit more because people go from being homeless to house back and forth, you know, like some people experience homelessness several times in their life. So that's kind of why the union decided to change the name. And it's a great little, you know, Toohoo. It sounds really cute. So we like that too.
And Aya, is that your experience too?
Yes, please, because the union is made up of people who have been homeless or underhoused. So, and the ally is committed to uplifting homeless voices. So the union is, the mission is to fight homelessness and for dignified, accessible, affordable housing for all. So we organize around things that matter to us, right, in our everyday lives. And things that will drastically improve our lives and the lives of others in similar situations.
One of the lessons the new union learned was to pay attention to what matters to their members right now. It's an approach they learned from the American homeless unions. A memorable example involves something very simple: toilet paper.
All right, so this toilet paper story, for some reason, really resonated with some of us. So we'll tell you this little story, and it really is around what it practically looks like to organize. Because I think we all love the idea of like organizing, yay, you know, like that sounds great, and like let's do it. But in the end, like, what does that really look like on the ground, practically speaking? And that's, I think, what a lot of people's questions are, is like, oh, what do you mean by that, right? What Anthony told us when he visited, he told a small group of us this story about in Chicago, they were looking to build a chapter of the National Union of the Homeless. And they were at a men's shelter in Chicago. And I don't have the specifics, but I have the general story. So they were at a men's shelter in Chicago and they were meeting, and it was like, you know, homelessness is the issue, you know, like we're gonna tackle this big issue of homelessness. And of course, everybody around the table, the few people that were involved, like cared deeply about that because they were people experiencing homelessness, of course. And then, but then he's like, but when we started talking, what they really cared about, what was affecting them that day, was the fact that that shelter was actually rationing their toilet paper and they were getting 3 squares of toilet paper a day. So for those people around that table, of course, homelessness mattered to them. But what really mattered to them and what made them feel that they were living like undignified and not being treated like humans was this toilet paper issue, right? And so what they did was said, this is then, if this is what's like, what's really, what we're all connecting with, what we're all frustrated with, what's actually affecting us negatively right now, let's organize around that. That's the thing. So they organized a letter that went to the larger organization that ran that specific shelter. And voiced various voices in that around like why this is undignified, why they need more toilet paper. It's silly to even think that this even needs to be said, but this is where they were, right? And then also they organized with the press and they said, you know, we got to have a press conference. People need to understand what's happening here. And in the end, they won their toilet paper issue. You know, they ended up like it got enough attention where people were like disgusted that people were being treated like this, and they ended up getting toilet paper. And a lot of us love that example because it was like, oh, right. It's like, it just helps you kind of like make this all real, right? It's like, tangibly speaking, let's just get in a circle and say, what is affecting you right now? Of course, we're fighting for homelessness. That's the whole point of the union. Of like, our whole goal is to eradicate homelessness, right? And we are working on that. Absolutely. That's the big picture. But the other thing is like to give you an example in our of like little things like the toilet paper example, in our own context, we had a chapter in Allen Gardens last summer because Allen Gardens encampment was very large last summer. And by the way, I think it's going to be very large again this summer. It's smaller right now, but I think that will change. So the Allen Gardens encampment had a chapter and it was going strong. And what that chapter voiced, so we were meeting and they said, you know, of course, again, homelessness, of course, like we want to be housed, but really what's affecting us right now is actually there's a person that's coming around to the tents and assaulting people at night, and it's making us all very unsafe, right? And we don't know how to handle that. This is a person driving in. This is like a housed person coming to the encampment. And there was not a trust of course, like most people there were like, we know if we tell the police about this, they're just going to clear the encampment. They're going to use it as an excuse to disperse us all around. We're going to be homeless in another place, right? And like, so that's going to harm us more. So they didn't trust, sadly, you know, like they didn't trust that system, right? Of like, of being able to take care of them. And they were right, you know? So for them, they had to come up with what does it mean for us to be safe in this situation? This is what matters to us right now. So they came up with the idea of self-defense classes, of holding self-defense classes in the park. So we did some in the actual park. And then we also did some that were more vulnerable stuff that we covered in the neighboring Church of St. Luke's. So they let us use their gymnasium. and did some different things in there to equip people. So those self-defense classes focused on two things. One was, if I'm being attacked, what are different things that I can do to protect myself? And also we equipped people with some different items and things that they could have in their tent. But also it was, what if I hear someone screaming, you know, and I'm scared to get involved because I don't want to get hurt. But what if we have a bigger game plan here? Like, if one person is screaming in a tent, or one person is saying a code word, for instance, right? We all know that there is an action we can take. And again, that collective power in a situation like that can really scare one person. One woman might not be able to scare somebody away, but 10 might be able to, right? So it was also focused on how to work together in a safety situation to keep someone safe. So that's the kind of practical thing that chapter came up with in that situation, because that's exactly what was harming them at that time, right? So just to give an example, like, that's the kind of things that really helped us kind of say, okay, what are we doing here and how do we do it? And we just kind of keep coming back to that, to be honest. and a lot of our actions have kept coming back to what is right in front of our faces, like, what is directly affecting us and how do we do something about it together?
And it's a union, so I'm wondering, how much is it like more traditional unions? Like, do the members pay dues, for instance?
Great question. This was, so at the NUH in the US, there is actually different models of different chapters. There are some chapters in the US that have very, very low dues that people pay. And there's some that do not. And so we voted on this very early on as a union, and it was unanimous, I think, that we should not have dues because it's just too difficult. Even a few dollars is a lot of money for folks. That's a whole meal sometimes at Tim Hortons or something like that. So our union does not have any dues. What we ask is that people participate, and we see people's presence as their gift, you know, like, that's what they're offering, like, is their expertise, which is extremely important. Their expertise, their experience, and their presence, and their commitment.
For the union to matter, it needed to get some public attention from the press and from the city. So in November, on National Housing Day, they staged their first press conference. It was a miserable cold day, and it had been raining. The press conference took place in a public park, Allen Gardens, which was home to a large encampment of people experiencing homelessness. Several of the union members spoke to a small but supportive crowd.
Thank you guys all for being here. We really appreciate it. We're not used to being listened to be honest, so it's great to have so many people come out. Thank you, and welcome friends and partner organizations.
We are not dogs. Yet dogs are often treated better than us. Dogs are given space and parks to exist.
We want a home like everyone else. We want to cook good meals while we listen to music. We want to get cozy in our beds while we watch a movie. We want to have joyful potlucks in our living room and play card games with friends. We want to have a couch to offer a seat to a friend in need of support and care. We want the same things you want. We want home.
Listen to us.
So the press conference was quite successful, especially being, in my opinion, for being very new and not being known by many groups yet. It was very good. We had some good press coverage. We had a few different stories, longer segments done on the campaign.
Those who do not come to the streets already disabled often experience slow deterioration over time. Our physical and mental health. We went into shelters or encampments fully able-bodied, but poverty has stolen that from us.
It was actually a massive turnout because the press was there. It was actually a rainy day, but people still showed up. So it was incredible because as a new group, and that was our very first press conference, it was amazing to have all these people turn out on a rainy day.
Has the city been paying attention to the union? Do you guys get calls or visits?
it depends on the issues that we're working on, right? So for instance, we had just recently, we've had a refugee chapter start. And again, when we asked that toilet paper question, right, that what is affecting you right now, someone started to share that this was during Ramadan. Ramadan had just started and they were fasting for Ramadan. And they said, well, at our shelter, they're not giving us food during the times that that we can eat, because as you know, you fast to sunset. And there were also people fasting for Lent at the same time. So there was a lot of people at that shelter represented that were fasting. Meals were being served at 5 and they were being told they cannot keep any meals. So I know it seems a little silly. So what mattered to that group that day was to organize around this issue that they needed a meal because they're already fasting all day and then they weren't getting food all night, you know? And so that day at that time, it was, let's write a letter. And what's another thing about the union, I think that is really a strength, is I find that sometimes it's very intimidating for people that are vulnerable to put themselves out there, like as an individual to say, I'm upset about this thing. You know, the city shelter system says that there's a complaints process, and not to say some people aren't comfortable doing that, but a lot of people aren't because they don't want to risk screwing something up for themselves, or they don't want to, like, it's only certain kinds of folks that would be very comfortable writing a complaint, right? And most people are not. So with the union, this was a group of people that were refugees, and I found most of them, I think all of them actually did not want to use their name, but they did have very powerful statements to share. So we were able to write a letter from the Toronto Underhouse and Homeless Union, right, without using specific names, which was really powerful, to be able to showcase what their experience had been. You know, one person saying something like, you know, I asked the staff if something was halal, and she said, psh, I don't know, who cares? Like, horrible experiences like that, you know, or like, this is very important to this person if this is halal or not. To, you know, oh, can we get a meal today? No, you know, just like all these statements that were said, but people are too afraid to risk them their own well-being to complain about it. In that case, one of the audiences we needed was to notify the city, because this was a city run shelter. So we sent that letter from Tuhu with these quotes and with these different experiences in it to the city. And we also actually organized meal delivery as a union for that specific shelter. So we try to, you know, like, that's the awesome thing about the union is people are living it. So you're not just thinking about one aspect, right? Like, it's like, this is my reality. So yeah, we need to organize, and yeah, we need to also like do something so we have food. So there was just these great ideas and this great energy around like, let's make this happen. And there ended up being a great partner that ended up delivering meals every day for that shelter for the rest of Ramadan and Lent, which was great. So just to say, so yeah, so I think that there's been a few different instances where we've contacted the city on behalf of an issue that we're organizing around, or that a subgroup in the union is organizing around. And I think that, you know, we really want to call the city to task, and, you know, and sometimes the city does some things right, which is great. And we want to say good job when that happens. And we also need to say, this is what you think is working, but it's actually not working. And this is how that looks. And I think that there are people at city level, I want to believe, that want to know that. So we want to be a space that is organized and articulate and can actually express, you know, you've made this policy and this sounds really good on paper, but here's how it's playing out. This is how it's not working for anyone.
So you guys are coming up on your first year anniversary and things are really happening, but you'd mentioned that not everybody in the union is actually someone who's underhoused or homeless. Do you need help from people who are housed to help the union further its goals?
Absolutely, we do. So a couple things come to mind. If you're in Toronto and you want something very tangible and hands-on, and you're available, this is great. We've got a few retired folks that are doing this. We have community ally role, which is basically a non-voting member of the union. So at first, you know, we wanted to build the union as this is all, if to be a member, you know, we're all kind of like in at the same level, right? And we're all members together. And then we realized quickly that there were people that wanted to be members, but they were, you know, upper middle class folks that were housed and like, and we were okay with that. It's like, okay, so do advocates become members? You know, so and we're still kind of figuring this out. For now, we do have some folks that are members that are in those spaces. But as time went on, some folks in the union had a great idea around like, what if there was a non-voting member position where people, so it's essentially a way to recognize that we really want to make conscious efforts around centering who has the vote, right? And it's people that are experiencing, for the by and large, it's people that are experiencing homelessness who has the vote. At the same time, though, we're realizing, yes, we need for capacity's sake, for working on things, for getting things moving, for all the logistical things that need to be done, we need help. Like, we need help with all these actions, with all these, even like the thing, even like the little things around writing the letter that the refugees wrote. We needed people to do some research for that, you know, like things like that. So we need tangible help. Sometimes that can be done by people in the union, and sometimes people in the union are in survival mode and they don't necessarily have the capacity to do all those things, right? So this community ally position was created as a non-voting member. So those folks can come to our local meetings. In fact, we want them there and they are part of the conversation. They're conscious of not speaking too much and just kind of like there to observe, to take notes, to pay attention, especially to when like someone's like, that we're going down the road of an idea, we're forming something, and they're listening to all the little tasks that need to be done and the things that need to be followed up on. And then that group of community allies, we have a WhatsApp group, and we'll usually talk through, okay, what were the things that some community ally folks could take? They also help with things, logistical things that we need, like getting the food to the meeting. So we always serve a meal at in our meeting. So we need more community allies. So that would be one role. If somebody wants a kind of a tangible hands-on thing, that would be one. And we ask people to make a commitment of at least 6 months and to just kind of be with us twice a month. So our meetings are every other Tuesday, the first and third Tuesday of the month at 6 o'clock. Another role is to just be our cheerleaders, show up when we have an action, you know, like you do, Stephen, which we're so grateful for. Doing like roles like that is really helpful as well. And then I will say, so at this point, all of the expenses come from my budget of the Regent Park Community Ministry. We did just get one grant, which is exciting, from Groundswell, which is really great. So that's our first outside grant. So if there's ever an opportunity, if somebody hears about a grant that might be a good fit for the union or things like that, we would love financial support and other support like that.
Very cool. And I think we're pretty much done. I just wanted to ask Aya if you've got any closing ideas or remarks you want to throw in there.
Just for the city and anyone that is on the top, maybe to come down to the people that are actually experiencing homelessness, mm-hmm. or who have lived experience, because that's when they'll actually get an idea of what is happening in the shelter system or in the encampments. So I think the only line that I will give is just for the people to come down to us, to come to us, not just to sit in the office and be like, okay, there's no one to talk to, or no one has anything to say. People have a lot of issues, but they're scared of coming up to talk about them because they're scared of maybe one losing their spot, or I don't know, anything could happen. So I think that's pretty much it. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, well, thank you for speaking with me. I'm sure our listeners will really be delighted to hear about this new initiative. And you know, it's nice to see hope taking form in the world, right? Where people get to speak for themselves, kind of feels like Holy Spirit work. So congratulations to both of you and to everybody and to you.
Thank you so much.
To who, right? To who?
Thank you so much, Stephen, for the opportunity.
All right, thank you. That's our show for today. Thanks for listening. The Rooster Crows podcast is produced by Lawrence Park Community Church, a progressive Christian church in Toronto, Canada. You can check out what we do by going to our YouTube channel or by visiting our website at www.lawrenceparkchurch.ca. Peace be with you, and thanks for listening.